This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
This is a strange moment for the United States, and I think we need to recognize that. I mean, the fact that you are questioning the electoral process of this shining city on a hill really does give a lot of people pause.
That's a South African reporter who is explaining America and U.S. politics for his nation's state broadcasters on one of the key issues in tomorrow's presidential election. Details coming up also. There is a heavy deployment of security forces in Dar es Salaam as Tanzania's incumbent president John Magufuli was declared winner in last week's election. And 75-year-old Yoweri Museveni was given the go-ahead to pursue his sixth term as Uganda's president. All these ahead on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. The world is watching as the U.S. prepares for a crucial election for president and thousands of other representatives at all levels of government. In Africa's most mature democracy, South Africa, citizens are watching the drama with interest, with the aid of a few seasoned journalists who are attempting to explain the quirks and developments of this historic poll. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
For 12 years, South African reporter Sherwin Bryce Peace has had the job of explaining America and U.S. politics for his nation's state broadcaster from his base in New York. 2020, however, is posing a new storytelling challenge with a pandemic and an election that even for many American journalists is a tough task. But Bryce Peace says the difficulty is universal.
The truth deficit that we've encountered with this White House, you know, whether it's from the president's medical team post his COVID-19 diagnosis or just on any other day, you're not getting the facts necessarily from this White House. So we always have to sort of put it through a prism. What has the president said and is it actually true? And this complicates the life of a journalist here.
His election coverage focuses broadly on the presidential race and on U.S.-Africa relations. He believes his audience prefers Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden in this race, largely because of Biden's connection to former President Barack Obama and for Biden's vice presidential pick, Kamala Harris. Also, he said President Donald Trump's disparaging comments about Africa have made him unpopular on the continent. In Johannesburg, retired U.S. diplomat turned writer Brooke Spector also tries to make sense of American politics for a South African audience in the Daily Maverick newspaper. This election, he says, has taken him to some strange places in his column.
About a month ago, I wrote a column which urged for international monitoring groups to check the American election to help keep it honest, straight, and free and fair.
His is not an isolated opinion. The African Union has even suggested an election observation mission to the U.S., a plan that does not appear to have materialized, though smaller teams from individual African states are reportedly planning their own observation missions. In that way, says analyst Lisa Lovaudrin, this poll could also influence how African nations behave in the future.
There's a paradigm shift, more than even a mind shift, in a sense that African countries and governments always feel on the back foot when it comes to everything, governance, even the responses to COVID-19. And what we've seen this last 6 months is that actually even the developed nations have been struggling. Their systems of governance are also under threat, as much as we have huge problems here.
Bryce Peace says this is an important time to be covering the U.S.
I mean, this is a strange moment for the United States, and I think we need to recognize that. I mean, the fact that you are questioning the electoral process of this shining city on a hill really does give a lot of people pause. I don't know how America comes out of this. The question is, what kind of leadership will you have November 3rd? I think that will be determinative of where we go here.
Where that is, Africa will be watching, and so will he. Anita Powell, VOA News. Johannesburg.
The Associated Press is reporting a heavy deployment of security forces in Tanzania's commercial hub, Dar es Salaam, after incumbent John Magufuli was declared the winner of last week's presidential election. An opposition leader says police have arrested several opposition leaders, including the chair of the Chadema opposition party. Police have sealed off areas where a peaceful demonstration was to take place today over the election, which the opposition says was flawed. U.S. Ambassador to Tanzania, Donald Wright, tweeted that the arrests were of extreme concern and urged the government to ensure the safety and security of all opposition leaders. Britain, according to a Reuters report, said it was troubled by heavy-handed policing of the election. Meanwhile, the South African Development Community has commended Tanzania for conducting its election in what it called a calm and tranquil manner. That's despite disputes from the opposition, which has challenged the victory of incumbent John Magufuli. Fabrone Botswana reporter Mokandisi Dube has the details.
Botswana headed the regional bloc's virtual observer mission. President Mokgweetsi Masisi chairs the SADC organ on politics, defense and security. Masisi commended Tanzania for holding a peaceful election and congratulated Magufuli. Official results show Magufuli winning 84% of the votes, while his main rival Tundu Lissu received 13% in a contest which featured 15 presidential candidates. In a SADC statement, Masisi said the regional bloc was happy with how the election was conducted. The 16-member state body observed the elections virtually due to travel restrictions imposed as a result of COVID-19. Despite SADC's satisfaction with election day voting, the opposition has said the process was fraudulent. Masisi urged stakeholders in the election to settle any dispute through established legal channels. Johannesburg-based political analyst and researcher Dr. Zenzo Moyo said the SADC's view of the Tanzania election was expected.
It is not really a surprise that SADC will go around in all these countries endorsing elections that would be perceived as unfair by the people on the ground, because for them, what they want to push more is more of a cooperative agenda than really fixing what the problems are.
Moyo said until there are structural changes, SADC will not criticize electoral processes within member states.
This, in effect, will continue throughout the region up until the structure that SADC follows is changed and altered. As long as that organ is the one that is responsible for elections, it is likely that a reigning president for a particular country will be endorsed.
An observer mission from the East African Community said the election was conducted in a regular manner. SADC will issue its final election report after gathering information from all stakeholders. For VOA, this is Mqondisi Dube in Gaborone, Botswana.
75-year-old Yaware Museveni was given the go-ahead today to pursue his sixth term as Uganda's president in a crowded field that popular youth leader Bobi Wine is expected to join tomorrow. 10 candidates have so far expressed interest in challenging Museveni in next year's election. Catherine Nambi reports from Kampala.
Museveni, who first took office in 1986 and has become the country's longest-serving president, was the first aspirant to appear before the Electoral Commission this morning. His nomination was confirmed by Justice Simon Byabakama, the commission chairperson.
Being the returning officer for the nomination of presidential candidates, hereby declare that Yoweri Museveni Tibuhaburwa Kaguta, a duly nominated candidate, in respect of the presidential elections 2021, having fulfilled the nomination requirements under the Presidential Elections Act 2005, as amended.
Museveni expressed gratitude for his nomination.
I want to thank my nominators who are here. I also want to thank the NRM supporters in the districts who signed, because you must get at least 100 from two-thirds of the districts, but we got more than the two-thirds.
Two of Museveni's Bush War allies, Henry Tumukunde, a former security minister under Museveni, and Mugisha Muntu, who heads one of Uganda's opposition parties, the Alliance for National Transformation, are among his challenges. Museveni's major contender, Robert Kyagulanyi Ssentamu, alias Bobi Wine, is expected to be officially nominated tomorrow. There is already a heavy security presence at Chagulanyi's home in Magere on the outskirts of Kampala. Police say The deployment is to ensure Chagulanyi's group does not organize illegal processions to the nomination venue. Patrick Onyango is Kampala Metropolitan Police spokesperson.
Police and the police agencies are keeping security, are seeing that security in the area is okay. They are seeing that there's law and order within the area. Who are still continuing with mobilizing their supporters, that they should come in big numbers to escort them to nomination area, that they will be dealt with accordingly.
The Electoral Commission has banned mass campaign rallies and large processions, citing the need to control the spread of COVID-19. Critics have viewed those restrictions as tactics to secure an advantage and stifle preparations by Museveni's opponents. A date for the election has not yet been set. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
Algerians approved the revised version of their constitution in yesterday's referendum, but a Reuters report says Algeria's lowest ever turnout, just 1 in 4 registered voters cast a ballot, has undercut the government's strategy of using the poll to turn the page on last year's political unrest. Many in the opposition Hirak Street Protest Movement opposed the referendum in general, with the vote taking place amid the COVID-19 pandemic. The head of Algeria's Electoral Commission said 2/3 of those who voted supported the changes and added the coronavirus had negatively affected turnout. The transitional government in Sudan has made enormous inroads towards reconciliation and peace with what are now officially termed the armed struggle movements. For decades, Darfur, Jebel, Nuba, South Kordofan, and the Blue Nile states fought the central government of Omar al-Bashir. However, some experts expect Darfur to call for a secession, repeating what South Sudan did in its breakaway. Khidir Haroun, former Sudanese ambassador to the U.S., spoke with VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi about how domestic peace would contribute to a stable, economically developed Sudan and how crucial it is to be vigilant about calls for secession.
Generally speaking, any peacemaking would contribute to the well-being of the country, provided that it will be just and fair and not at the expense of other regions. In some of the areas you mentioned, some people are not satisfied. I will pick East Sudan as an example. People should be consulted and peacemaking should be comprehensive and endorsed by an elected national parliament.
There was speculation lately about separation of Darfur. Is that feasible?
I don't see. There are some unsatisfied movement in different parts of the country, which urgently need some movement by the government, the leadership also, to tackle these problems properly. I don't think that Darfur would secede simply because it will be a landlocked area and the Darfurian people are scattered throughout the country. We should be very serious. We should be also watch carefully such kind of secession calls in different parts of the country, even the northern part of it, which is tradition. It's never carried any arms against the central government. I mean, the area extends from Khartoum to the Egyptian border. This is, they never rebel against the central government. Now they are talking about something similar to this. So I think people should try the leadership, the intellectuals in the country. They should try to reach some sort of peaceful, some sort of inclusion to everybody in the country, because this is not one single party or a group of parties with certain orientation would be able to resolve the issues of the country. This is the time which politics should put aside and people should join each other in order to sit down and to consult themselves what should be done for the benefit of the United Sudan. Any secession call will encourage a similar kind of secession in different parts of the country. We should be vigilant. The government and the people also in the opposition, they should be vigilant about that. And this should not be a kind of political gains for anyone. It will undermine the country. It will be at the expense of well-being of Sudanese all over the country.
That was Kadir Haroun, former South Sudan ambassador to the U.S., speaking with VOA senior analyst Mohammed Al-Shinawi. The International Organization for Migration is providing rapid COVID-19 tests to thousands of truck drivers across Kenya as part of an effort to reinvigorate regional economies in Eastern and Central Africa. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
Much of Africa's multi-billion dollar cross-border trade has been brought to a grinding halt because of the COVID-19 pandemic. Truck drivers, identified as a high-risk group for spreading the virus, have to be tested for coronavirus before they can deliver their goods. That has resulted in thousands of truckers being stuck at Kenya's sprawling port in Mombasa, awaiting test results, which could take up to 2 weeks. Trucks at the port carry cargo destined for Uganda, Rwanda, Burundi, South Sudan, and the Democratic Republic of Congo. Spokesman for the International Organization for Migration, Paul Dillon, tells VOA the drivers cannot leave the port until their COVID-19 tests come back negative. He says that creates economic hardships for the drivers.
When you have drivers who are operating on very thin profit margins, who are driven by an imperative to deliver their product from Mombasa port to these far-flung countries, any moment, any time that's spent sitting at the border waiting for either test results to come back or for issues related to visas and other mobility issues that have been implemented at the border is money out of their pocket.
Dillon says the turnaround time for COVID-19 test results administered by the IOM to truckers is between 24 and 36 hours. He says IOM staff has tested more than 17,000 drivers since July, and that has made a huge difference.
The impact is quite astonishing. I mean, where once one had 90-kilometer traffic jams at a border, now there's a relatively freer flow of goods out of the port of Mombasa to countries in the region.
Dillon says about 2% of all test cases are coming back positive. He says Kenya's Ministry of Health assesses the seriousness of the cases and determines whether medical intervention is required or home quarantine measures are more appropriate. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Despite raging salary disputes that have led to critical parts of the civil service staying home for months, Zimbabwe says government workers can expect a 13th-month bonus check this year. Reporter Kuzai Zanawashi has more from Harare.
In an effort to avoid reliance on the U.S. dollar that had become de facto currency for daily transactions, the government banned the foreign money and made another effort to introduce its own currency, the RTGS. Instead of stabilizing and balancing the economy, the RTGS spiraled downward steadily. The U.S. dollar was permitted again as the cost of living increased and the demand for U.S. dollar grew even higher. The dollar to RTGS exchange rate has somewhat stabilized since local mobile money transfer were banned and a foreign currency exchange market was created with purchases made at auctions. But Kudakwashe Sambo, a worker in the manufacturing sector, says employees are no better off as U.S. dollar prices keep going up.
It's unfortunate that things continue to go up in U.S. dollar terms. At a time, most of us are earning RTGS, or should I say local currency. It's really problematic in the sense that the moment we get our salaries in RTGS, we have to convert them to U.S. dollars. Those U.S. dollars, again, they're being eroded by inflation in U.S. dollar terms. So we don't really know what to do. We are really stuck here.
The stable rate between the U.S. dollar and the RTGS in recent months has not stopped some companies from increasing their fees. Economist Victor Boroma explains their thinking.
During the course of trying to re-dollarize the local economy, there was a lot of subsidization in terms of pricing for various goods and services in the local market. So now what happens is most companies are actually sort of correcting what has been happening in the market where they are falling back to most of the prices that prevailed between 2015 to 2018. And in a way, it is inflationary, actually, because you would expect a situation where probably you just cross-rate to what you were paying in Zim dollars, then you get the equivalent in US dollars.
He adds that fuel is a major factor behind setting costs in US dollars. It's no longer scarce, as was the case until recently, and it's sold primarily in US dollars. While the auction system and other policy measures have stabilized the exchange rate, it's still not always easy to get dollars, which affects delivery of public services. Jacob Mafume is the mayor of Harare.
It's problematic because, as you know, as councils, we are sometimes deemed to be secondary users. So we have a problem with the auction system in relation to its pre-qualification requirements. So it then creates a hindrance in how we then operate. We then have to qualify for the auction, and in some certain instances, we are deemed not to qualify, then that creates a problem.
Councils had been relying on the central government to allocate the foreign currency they needed to pay crucial obligations such as water treatment chemicals. Now they have to battle it out in the auction system and sometimes do not qualify, further affecting service delivery in most municipalities. Sambo says the demand for US dollars has grown. Employers are not quick to ensure workers get paid that way. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zunawashe from Harare.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing The Voice of America.
Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's Newsmaker Interview Program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African Beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bongo flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the sunny side of sports, Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/Sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.